is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. The views and opinions of the host and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by Advantage Insurance, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Bahamas, J.S. Johnson, NUA Insurance Agents and Brokers, Ron's Electric Motors, Wendy's, and Wilmax Pharmacy.
Afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name's Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. I do want you to know that the devil, Satan, does not want me to do this show today. He's been messing with the internet all morning. Something told me to go in, but I got in a situation where I had to do it from home, and we're going to pray the devil away, that he stays away from us today, and we can do our show, and we can be free from his interference. All right? Satan, get thee behind me. The power of Christ compels you. All right. If the internet goes out, I'm gonna be real with you. You're gonna be listening to a replay for the rest of the show. It's like that at the moment. But hopefully, you know, prayers up, the devil will leave us alone. BTC, the devil is trying to sabotage you. Okay? The devil doesn't want you to have my business or any business along Village Road, and you must do all in your power. When you see the devil come in, you can't stand around. Oh, the devil come. You got to act. You got to do something. You know the devil messing with you. Get on top of it. All right? There's the fiber connection is being targeted by Satan along Village Road. Please, do what you need to do. Bring the preacher. Bring the olive oil. Let's make it happen. Bring the technician. Okay. So first thing is, I had more than one in the central bank yesterday, quite irate that I did not correct Lincoln Bain when he spoke about repatriation of funds outside of the Bahamas and into the Bahamas. I did not, to be honest with you, I didn't remember the exact specifications, although I do know you do need permission from the central bank. But what I'm going to do is this. In order to be very clear on how our exchange control regime works, do you need exchange control? Not necessarily. But I want to bring on some people from the central bank so we can understand how our exchange control works. We could also talk about cryptocurrency, XYZ, and where we are with that. Let me bring the experts on it. Like, I know some of it, but we need to bring the experts, people who do this day in, day out. They can come and talk about all the ins and outs of exchange control. I don't got a major problem with exchange control. Like, I get why it is. It's a hassle at times. And I do subscribe to some of what Lincoln said about opening up the economy. Not the economy, sorry. Opening up the ability for Bahamians to invest outside of the Bahamas. I want some of that too. I'm with him. I want some Alphabet Co. Inc. I want some Apple. You know what I'm saying? With the cryptocurrency thing, I think you gotta be careful. And he's also right. In a free market, you're free to lose your shirt. But how we approach it, we have differences, you know? And I will hopefully be able to talk more with Lincoln about these things because he's a bright guy. You know, and I don't agree with him on everything, but I don't agree with my mom on everything, when God rest her soul. I don't agree with my wife on everything. It just bees like that. It is what it is, you know. And so, but it's good to have a debate, and it's good to have people who are interested and who care and who could talk about these things. So definitely I'm going to bring the central bank on to explain it. And hopefully, you know, Lincoln's out there listening and we can continue to have a dialogue. All right. In any event, you can text me at 422-4796. 422-4796. You can also call me at 323-6232, 323-6232, and 325-4316, 325-4316, 325-4259, 325-4259. This is great show as usual. You remind me of the PLP government when they wanted to blame the devil on that. They wanted to tell the Bahamian people. The devil made them introduce that. I don't know. Look, devil make you do stuff sometime. Don't, you know, how it is. You know, see, the devil made me do it, but man, something, just, I don't know what I was doing. It just had to be the devil, right? It's the devil. When you're doing good things, the devil targets you. When you're doing it like a public service, like I'm doing right now, well, I get paid for this. But when you're doing this, like what I'm doing right now, it's a public good. The devil doesn't want this. He didn't want you to learn. He didn't want you to hear the truth. He wants you to hear lies. All right. So aside from all that, let's talk about what I wanted to talk about. So last night at the University of the Bahamas, the Prime Minister gave a lecture as part of an installment of the Meet the Policymakers lecture series from the Government and Public Policy Institute of the University of the Bahamas. Okay, so Lang, Trivago Lang, he's the director of the Government and Public Policy Institute at the University of the Bahamas. And he organized these lectures and he was moderating the lectures. I saw Lang the other day. I was surprised when I saw him. He walked in the studio. You look really good, by the way. Remember, like before the pandemic, all your knees were hurting, Lang, and you were like, you had a belly going on there. Like I ain't watching nothing, but you look good, my friend. Compliment. I'm trying to compliment you. You look really good. Okay, so the Prime Minister did a lecture on the National Development Plan for the Bahamas. Now we'll talk about the lecture itself, but let me say this. The National Development Plan, in fact, I don't have my copy here. I have my copy at my desk at work. The National Development Plan was a plan that is very intricate, deals with the overall Bahamas, almost every cultural, social, economic aspect of it, deals with individual islands. Like it's got a very detailed plan for Andros. It was sponsored by the Inter-American Development Bank. And it was one of the things that the Christie administration really touted in order to move forward. And I'm going to explain to you, as the Prime Minister explained, why you need a plan. All right? So when the Minnesota administration came into power, they essentially abandoned the National Development Plan. And they're going to argue semantics about what abandoned means, but it was the University of the Bahamas that really picked up the mantle when the Minnesota administration wasn't interested and continued looking at the National Development Plan. Lang and the Government Public Policy Institute folk, they put forward a set of key performance indicators. They assessed the plan and looked at it and tried to figure out like how parts of it could be actionable. All right. And he's continued to do work on it. But the last administration did abandon it. This administration is now trying to pick it back up. All right. Which is laudable. And it's good because you need a plan, man. You know, and in fact, I'll let Davis say it. But before I get into that, let me get into just my lecture. To me, when I'm going to a university for a lecture, I want someone to give me an evidence-based review of the subject matter. So Davis's approach, I believe, was prudent in the overall thrust of it, okay? So he focused on national development since a little bit pre-majority rule, post-majority rule, post-independence. And he focused on it by looking at overall administrations. And I don't think that's the wrong way to go. I think that's the right way to go because you could look at your national development history in a number of ways and in a number of different contexts, right? But if we're going to look at national development plan in terms of the Pendling administration, Ingram, Christie, Ingram, Christie, Jesus, Minnis, now Davis, you can make a case to see how national development tracked. And that's perfectly fine, all right? But my approach would be to look at the metrics of national development, all right? This isn't just some esoteric thing that's in the ether. You can look, this is why we have these discussions. You can look at your statistical data and understand how your nation is developing. The Department of Statistics conducts a census. It conducts a birth and death study. it does a spending, what do you call it? A household expenditure, right? It does household income. You can check it. You can track it from at least the 70s onward. National Insurance has a ton of statistics. You can check the central bank, the budget for debt metrics, et cetera. So I would look at national development in those terms, even though I'm looking administration to administration. Where I thought he really missed a grand opportunity was in that he focused on the politics of it, as opposed to drilling down into the policy, all right? He did speak to policy over successive administrations, but it became political in that it was about the PLP and the FNM. Here's the thing. I don't have a problem with you talking about the PLP and the FNM's approach to policy. I think that's important. But I got an issue when you don't give it historical context and you really give it short shrift in terms of just saying, psh, it didn't work. All right. So I'll just give you a brief overview of what he said in terms of the history of it. But first, let me say this. And he said he wanted to be, he said, the lectures which I enjoy most both enlighten and provoke. And he was provocative, but I don't know that I was enlightened where we're going with the national development plan. All right. He was certainly provocative. I don't know that I was enlightened. I agree with him. I enjoy lectures that are enlightened and that provoke thought. Listen to me. I've been to university, right? Because I'm fancy. Yeah. I've also attended numerous lectures at UB. I've also watched a lot of TED Talks until they started getting weird. Right. And the fact of the matter is that when I'm looking at a lecture, I really am looking at somebody who's examined an issue and wants to give a point of view on the issue. Your opinion shouldn't be the primary focus, but you can have an opinion, but your opinion must be informed and your opinion should be backed by data. So if I'm saying to you, the Ingram administration's approach to trickle-down economics didn't work and it consolidated financial resources in the hands of a few, you could have that opinion, but you got to show me why you say that. What informs this opinion? Or you just don't like their approach. You just thought the rich got richer and the poor got poorer, because that's not what I remember happening. All right. So he didn't do that. He didn't back it with evidence. And that I thought was the flaw in that. All right. Hell, I'm happy he came and talked about it, all right? I thought that he missed an opportunity to really unite and drive the conversation forward, because we're going to now fall on political lines and we're not going to start defending and not in your political parties, but we're going to now get into which political party is better for national development, all right? Which that's a discussion we can have, but I'd rather talk about how your administration is going to move national development forward. And he did talk about some of that, but he gave that, to me, less focus. I'm not going to say word count, but less focus than he should have. All right. So my critique of the speech, a missed opportunity, I thought. Okay. But we're going to talk about what informs his mores and values. And I think it's very important for a prime minister to do that so that you understand his thinking. All right. I think that's very important. So he says, the lectures which I enjoy most, both enlighten and provoke, and so I'm looking forward to the discussion afterwards, which will surely indicate whether I've succeeded in delivering either. Yeah. I'm going to give you a pro tip, Davis. Expect weirdness when you open up the lines for any and everybody to come ask you a question. Expect weirdness, right? It's going to happen. So weirdness ensued, all right? You had the gender theorists, who I've had on my show before as well. And to me, some of the questions, I don't know if I think any of them, some of the questions didn't seem to be about a conversation of where we're going as a nation, but seem to be about different segments of the population and how they are being served. So you had, and I got no problem talking about LGBT issues. I just, listen, I'm not LGBT. I'm what, like the A, I'm an ally. I want y'all to do well, right? That's my version of allyship, I guess. But I don't sit here going, well, and I could be wrong about this. I could be looking at it the wrong way. But since I'm in the majority, I kind of, I guess, take it for granted. I don't sit here and go, well, what's the government doing for heterosexual people and my heterosexual practices XYZ? Because it's not the overarching concern. It's such a normal and accepted thing that men are into women and women are into men, and we get married, have families, raise children, and the cycle continues. It's such a normal thing that I don't think of it in terms of sexuality. When I look at my life and national development, I think that's just a part of it. I don't want the government like in my bedroom, and they're not. So I'm good. I'm Gucci after that. All right. They seemed incredibly specific is what I want to say. So I don't know that what Brave is going to do for LGBT people, because he has the queerest administration in history. I don't know how y'all assess that. I don't know if y'all took a poll or all the LGBT people know each other and they take names. I don't know. They may have meetings like the light-skinned people. I don't know what they do, but I don't know how you assess that the queerest administration history. You're talking about what to do with energy, the gentleman, and he gave his own ideas. That is a part of national development, but it seemed incredibly specific to a few segments of national development. All right. So we got to take a break, and we'll talk more about what went down last night. And all right, stay tuned.
Wendy's spicy means Wendy's spicy. Unlike the other guys, our spicy activates all your senses for a taste of Wendy's spicy. Try the new Chipotle Crunch Cheeseburger made with fresh beef, or the new Chipotle Crunch Chicken Sandwich, both with delicious crispy jalapenos, Chipotle aioli, cheddar cheese sauce, and much more. Taste the Wendy's spice in every bite of irresistible Chipotle Crunch Chopped Fries too. Stop in today for the flavor you crave. Wendy's, different inside and out.
For 25 years, Advantage Insurance has provided coverage for your most prized possessions, offering insurance plans to cover your vehicle, home, business, and boat with customized options that work with your budget. Now, Advantage says thank you to all our loyal customers and business partners over the past 25 years. Call 356-0285 or visit Advantage Insurance on Collins Avenue today. When every dollar counts, count on Advantage. Celebrating 25 years of service.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24-hour emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
You do coffee your way. Double shot, decaf, cappuccino.
Light roast, Colombian, no milk.
You do vacations your way.
Hiking boots, tent, mountains.
Five-star hotels and theater.
And now you can do insurance your way.
Online.
Email.
Chat.
WhatsApp.
Or in branch. For home, car, travel, boat, or business insurance, do it anyway with NUA Insurance agents and brokers. Visit NUAinsurance.com, call, or stop by a branch today.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. All right. So here's what he says. Don't get in your feelings too much, right, about me critiquing Brave Davis. I like him too, okay? But if we're going to talk sense in this country, we got to be able to critically assess what people are saying, particularly the leader of government in our country, and speak about it in a manner that is as dispassionate as possible, but sometimes the evoke passion. So before you get in your knickers in a bunch, let me read to you what this man said. He says, in thinking about how to address the subject, I first considered the most direct approach. I thought to reflect on the findings of the National Development Plan to date and set out some of the priorities of our administration in completing and implementing them. Okay, you recall I said that's what I thought he should have done. However, he says, but this would have been enlightenment without provocation. The provocation, or rather, the things upon which we might not all agree, will hopefully prove for more fertile discussion and debate. So he certainly delivered on the provoking part, okay? First, let's talk about what the National Development Plan means. So he says, it's perhaps best understood in the negative, okay? The negative meaning not why I have a national development plan, but what happens when you don't have a national development plan. He says, without a national development plan, the government of the day has to make decisions and choices, most of which are based on short-term needs. Given our five-year electoral cycle, we need to spend money on visible outcomes which might be sufficiently impressive to inspire a few votes. But the money might be better spent on less visible outcomes, such as improving coastal defenses, which would prevent long-term coastal erosion. Without a plan, governments would always have to start every initiative from scratch, obtaining basic data, formulating opinions, and consulting the public before determining a course of action. Any rigorous planning exercise done properly and well helps to ensure success. It does not guarantee it, but without a plan, success is likely to be far more elusive. And he's absolutely right. Okay, without a plan, you're gonna probably fail. Okay, you may luck into success, but without a plan, you're probably gonna fail. Okay, so we've been operating as a nation without a consistent long-term plan that we adhere to, because I'm going to show you something. Okay, so here's the issue. If you think that when Pinland got in power, he was just like, you know what, we just gonna do whatever, we gonna put whatever wherever, and if we ain't nobody gotta plan it out, ain't nobody not, no. Okay, my father worked at the development bank. Okay, he had and I looked at his study. I was in high school, right? And I looked at his study, and I was looking at, like, just volumes of studies that were done by World Bank, other people. Planned New Providence out to a T, to the street. I'm not playing. I'm talking plans in terms of they discuss the elevation of neighborhoods. They discuss drainage system. New Providence was supposed to look a whole lot different than what it does today, which is this hodgepodge of weirdness. Everything was planned out. All the building regulations, everything was planned. Government agencies, what they would look like, beach access, all of this stuff was from the 70s. Was planned to a T. So we go around saying, well, ain't nobody never planned nothing. It ain't that they ain't never planned nothing. It's their adherence to the plan. Oh, God, that scared me. It's my wife's cat. Jesus. Don't do that. Why do cats rub up against your leg? It's weird. Is it, are they, is it because they're hungry? I don't know. Anyway, everything was planned to a T. Did they follow the plan? No, not really. Not in lockstep for certain. So he's looking at, let me show you what he says. He says, there are Bahamians today who still hold dear some version of earlier ideas of national development. Are they wrong to do so? Of course not. They are Bahamians. And even if they are not the view of the majority, they still have influence. Okay, the cat's not going to leave me alone until I open the door, I guess. One moment. Come on. Okay, sorry about that. Cat's name. Cheddar. Cat's name is Cheddar. Because it's orange. My daughter named it. Okay, so he says, there are Bahamians today who still hold dear some version of earlier ideas of national development. Are they wrong to do so? He says, of course not. They're Bahamians. You're entitled to feel however you want to feel. You're Bahamian. And even if they're not the view of the majority, they still have influence. He says, so let us first consider the pre-independence period, the 20th century up until 1967. He says, we often describe this period in racial terms, focusing on the divide between the ruling white minority and the black majority. But the form of legalized racial oppression that existed, the Bahamian version of apartheid in South Africa, was supported by an economic system that did all that it could to protect the interests of the minority. In turn, the national development goals and strategies of the day were to stoutly defend and maintain the status quo. One second here. This says, education, health, and economic opportunities were concentrated on the minority, and the economy and the society were structured around those so privileged. Now, he ain't lying. Let me continue. One of the most lethal weapons for oppression is the deprivation of education. And so education for the majority stopped shortly after primary school. It stopped before that in most instances. You didn't get past fourth grade, right? The majority of people. It says healthcare was not universal, nor was the right to vote. Correct. I don't think we got the right to vote until 58. And then you still couldn't vote widespread if you had to have suffrage and everything. Healthcare was not universal, nor was the right to vote. As was widely reported at the time, particularly by foreign newspapers like the Miami Herald in the 1960s, corruption and conflicts of interest among politicians were endemic. The public treasury was used as a bank for private interests, and the islands of the Bahamas were ruled by a kleptocracy, whereby land and other natural resources were granted to and exploited for the benefit of the ruling class. That initial, listen to what this man is saying now. This is indeed thought-provoking. He says, that initial parceling out of our natural resources means that those who benefited from it were given an enormous head start in terms of the ability to accumulate capital and wealth. Today, we can easily see how that generational wealth has conferred economic security upon those families. This is what enabled the infrastructural interests and holdings they have accrued since. Now, none of what this man said here is untrue. Did he give the broader context of all the different minutiae and facets of Black Bahamians who prospered, et cetera? No. But you may be careful about the words you choose, like kleptocracy, but there is no doubt that some of the more lucrative segments of society were carved out by families, particularly the economy, were carved out by families who, even when the transfer of government power occurred, were still so far ahead of the game, still had so much resources, that it lasts them their lifetime, their grand lifetime. Now, was every white person in the Bahamas, you're talking about white and black, right? Was every white person in the Bahamas rolling in dough? And they all came up because the government gave them something? No, of course not, right? You got people who work blood, sweat, and tears their whole lives to build something, right? Often alongside people of color, right? So not everybody's the same, but did the ruling class use government to shore up themselves and their families for generations? Absolutely. All right. Absolutely. That is correct. And what he says is hopefully none of this is surprising anyone. All right. I got to ask you, I've talked to people who were alive, who were adults pre-majority rule. And though they said the Bahamas was a great place to live, they say that because they didn't realize that they were actually poor. Okay? They were poor. Y'all aren't crying about poverty today. Everybody, I got an iPhone, but I can't buy minutes. I'm poor. No. All right? They were poor. The vast majority of black people in the country were poor. All right? And there was different races too. So those people would inform you if you speak with them, have some conversations with them, that, you know, if they describe life pre-1967, there wasn't all this killing y'all had going on. But when they describe life pre-1967, it's something that is totally unfamiliar to people who are living today, right? As much as you want to relate, it is unfamiliar to people who are living today that Lyndon, we got to take a break. We'll take a break and we'll talk about the significance of majority rule and pinning, which you have to look at, to me, in its entirety. All right. And then at the end of it, you come out and say, well, here's the balance of it. And one of the things he did wrong was he just looked at Pinling's legacy in terms of the transformative part, not the parts that people say were not in the best interest of the nation. All right. We gotta take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name's Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. Okay, we're talking about Davis's speech. Juan, they started the debate to shorten the time from 2 years to 6 months for the people that were locked up and convicted during COVID for the pump, et cetera. Member for St. Anne's already saying, be careful with this bill because we don't want PLPs looking out for their people when it comes to clearing their criminal record. Why do they think PLPs will always do corrupt things, but not them? Watch how they come into Parliament today to defend locking people up for going to the pump and selling coconut water and being 1 minute late outside a curfew. Watch their foolishness today in Parliament. Well, they're talking about the amendment to the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act. And I read Adrian White's comments, and he's a criminal attorney. And I don't know that what he said is at all. In fact, I do know. What he said is at all not the case. He's saying the government's seeking to cut people's sentences short. They're not doing that. The government is seeking to treat convictions as spent after a particular period of time outside of what is already specified in the act for certain categories of crime. So the government's not saying we're going to release you, come to Parliament and release you from prison. Here's the PLP, let's release him from prison. If that were the case, that would be absurd. But that's not the case. The government simply wants to shorten the time it takes for you to have your conviction come off your criminal record. And the government can do that already. They already have the power to do that, the government does. If you're talking about you don't want the minister doing it, they already have the power to do it. Okay? The Committee of the Prerogative of Mercy, et cetera. The Governor General has certain powers. The minister can refer certain things. They already have it. They're just seeking to go by consent of Parliament, which I think I wouldn't even have gone through all that, but they already have that power. Also, you do realize it's the Parliament that determines what is and is not a crime, right? So you think they're just going to have PLP's records cleared? Like that's your overarching fear? Let's not do it because they can't release you from, but you think that they're going to clear up the records of certain PLPs, and that would be what, some cataclysmic thing that reverberates through our collective what would it be done, right? For drug possession. And there's an exclusionary clause to the thing for manslaughter, drug possession with intent to supply, rape, I believe, murder. I know y'all looking for stuff to talk about, but make it make sense when you talk it, right? Everything ain't a thing. Okay? This ain't a thing. Nah. Anyway, I can tell you when I have some more information. There's something they've been talking about today that might be a thing. I'm going to go look at it. Little more closely, I can sense a disturbance of the things that was said today in Parliament. Okay, so we talked about Brave Davis's assessment of the majority rule, pre-majority rule government, all right, and what it meant for the nation. And I'm not even gonna sit here and go, well, no, Brave, you were, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Balance. A lot of people of color were oppressed. And a lot of people build generational wealth for their families. All right. That they benefit from to this day. And guess what? I'm mad at you. At all. You think if my pops left me $100 million, I was going to be around here sweating all guilty. Oh, no, this one didn't get mad. Whatever. I'm going to go help people. I'm going to go build some companies, let y'all get some jobs, etc. I ain't necessarily into all the handout business, but I ain't gonna be mad at all. Right? I'm not mad at you. Now, it can't continue to be this vast inequality, but I'm not mad at you for what you already got. And also, while we at it, not on me, but why are we always talking about race and what happened and slavery and colonialism? Let's move on. Yeah, you want to move on because it was fine for you. You did great, right? let's all move on. I don't want to move on. I want to remember how my grandparents lived and were treated, and how people like them and their kids had to work triple, quadruple hard just to have anything. Now, you can't want all the stuff and don't want to talk about what happened. It can't be both. All right. So that was his assessment of pre-majority rule. All right. So he said that to give context, he said, to what happened by 1973 when we were independent. All right. He said that's the context inherited by Sir Lyndon Pinning and his colleagues. Okay. He said their approach to national development is captured in the title Dr. Doris Johnson chose for her book, The Quiet Revolution. Listen carefully to me now. Quiet because Pinling wanted to ensure that the minority wealth holders didn't flee the country, possibly causing the economy to collapse. And revolution because he also wanted to achieve what the dictionary defines as a forcible overthrow of a social order. So some of you hear the revolution and you're going, unless you burn it down, it ain't a revolution. But there are ways to change the social order. It says from 1967 to 1992, especially after independence in 73, the speed and extent of the changes of those years was immense. Okay. Up until now, it remains the most transformational time in our post-independence era. If you want to see a tangible expression of those changes, have a look at the Yellow Pages from 67 to 1975. Look at the faces of the professionals advertising there. When you survey the ads for doctors, lawyers, accountants, architects, engineers, and so on, it's striking how the racial and national profile changed. Striking also to note the expansion in the number of qualified behavior professionals, the new middle class. Transformation, the hallmarks of this period were the creation of the foundational institutions and structures of our modern Bahamas, the central bank, the Royal Bahamas Defense Force, the National Insurance Scheme, compulsory education, through to high school for all, and of course, the founding of the college and now University of the Bahamas. Okay? Here's where we get sticky. In fact, let me just stick a pin in it right here to talk about this part. All right. So 1967 and 1992. Why do you say that? Because Pinling got out of office in 1992. The speed and extent of the changes of those years was immense. Okay. So I don't think it does anyone any good to pretend that from 1982 to we had a rocky time as a nation in terms of the corruption of certain institutions that were here, that were established, that were longstanding, in terms of reputational damage, in terms of becoming incredibly partisan, and the damage that politics did to so many Bahamian families, I don't think it does anyone any good to just pretend that that didn't happen. That though we did form, and look at what he says. He said the hallmarks of this period were the creation of the foundational institutions and structures of our modern Bahamas, the central bank. Formed in 1973. The Royal Bahamas Defense Force formed in 1970. Someone help me. National Insurance Scheme founded in 1974. Compulsory education through to high school for all achieved by 1973. And the foundation of the college, now University of the Bahamas, found in the 70s. Now, if you're saying to me that the hallmarks of the entire period with the creation of the foundational institutions, then those institutions were created in the 1970s. We're still missing a whole chunk, which we're not talking about. All right. We got a call. Sure. Let's do it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello. Hello?
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Juan, I called you the other day. I was talking about the crew of the cruise ship coming on.
I can't hear you. Let me turn it up.
Yes.
Say it again.
Hello? You can hear me?
Say that again. Say it again.
You can hear me now?
I got you. Say it again.
Yeah, I was talking about the crew of the cruise ship coming on our shores to work like waiters, us boys, bartenders, even bathroom attendants. Mm-hmm. I mean, all them jobs, and the humans could do them jobs. I thought we only bringing people on our shores to work where you can find the humans to do jobs with the humans to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know these people that do that pay any work permits, but I'm sure they don't pay national insurance. And that might be the missing link for our national insurance right there. We get the humans to them, bartenders, and waitress job on them queues. Because even in Bimini, you are Virgin Islands, Virgin crews come to Bimini, and no natives work when they come in. All cool members work.
Okay.
They have been locked up. Only their guests go in. Only their staff goes to work. My God, one or two. The human people working there for their security or something like that. But our tenders and waiters, I think we, the humans, are some of the best doing that kind of job.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I know you were talking about it before, and you were talking about it in the context of shoring up the National Insurance Fund. I'll be honest with you. I don't know that that's that enough jobs to do that. We're talking about
not only national
billions of dollars that we need.
The amount of people that do these jobs, of folks from Nassau and Freeport working in the New York, they get their family in Nassau and Freeport. They can come forward. They're not any union or anything like that. They can't make no noise. Then Virgin crews coming like twice or three times a week. That's the day they off. So they off 3 days a week. I mean, they only work in 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, you know what? I'll try to figure it out for you. But we are having a context about national development as opposed to that specific thing. If I don't know the agreements that the cruise ship have in terms of their private islands, if there are jobs that Bahamians can do that are there, I think Bahamians should be doing those jobs. As far as will that save national insurance, I highly, highly doubt it. The National Insurance Reserve Fund is at $1.5 billion, and it's going to be gone in 6 years, according to the actuary. So we need a lot of money in order to rescue that. All right. Because if we're running through $1.5 billion, and think about it, if you're running through $1.5 billion in 6 years, every 6 years, or even shorter if the birth rate continues to decline, you're going to need $1.5 billion, right? So we're talking about billions of dollars that we need to sustain national insurance. That's why I don't understand why. And I didn't mean to drift into this. I don't understand why the current administration is like, well, we'll get to it. We're not going to, like, we're talking about something. I don't want to pay no more national insurance. I'm glad you said not now. But at the same time, you saying not now, let's figure it out what we're doing, what we're going to do. All right. So anyway, he says that all the hallmarks of this period were the creation of these institutions and structures. All these institutions, when was the Defense Force created? Somebody help me. I know. The Defense Force had to be the 70s. All of these institutions that we know and love today that are great were created in the 70s. Now you have some other stuff that was created more recently, 80s, 90s, but most of this stuff was like the 70s. And so no one's questioning whether the 70s was a period of great transformational change in the late 60s. That's true, but then we hit some roads, didn't we? Hit some walls, didn't we? Yeah? Let's continue. He says, with the majority now able to be properly educated and given access to the jobs and careers that had been previously denied, a new middle class emerged, one largely composed of members of the racial majority, keen to build homes and businesses and create wealth generations. But With the oligarchical order left intact, it was perhaps foreseeable that an economic glass ceiling would tacitly remain. Okay, so somebody explain to me what economic glass ceiling tacitly remained after Bahamians were properly educated and given access to jobs, careers, land. What was the economic glass ceiling? Help me. For educated Bahamians. RBDF, March 1980. Okay, fine. RBDF was the, was 80. Okay, I'll give you that. No problem. Most of the stuff was the 70s. I don't know what he's talking about with an economic glass ceiling. All right? Because from what, from my, are you talking about Bahamians becoming as rich as the oligarchical order? Is that what you're saying? Because I think that there was there were booms in the Bahamas. All right. So there was a boom from the late 60s through, you know, 77, let's say, right? It's a major economic boom. Okay. Of course, you would know that America was in recession in the late 1970s. So that impacted us as well. There was a boom. All right. During much of the Reagan years, and also there was a false economy propped up by the drug trade. Okay. And then again, recession in the 80s, and then started stuff started turning around in the 90s. There was a boom in the 90s. Right. And I think you gave short shrift to Ingram in that economic development that the Bahamas had in its history. Was during the first Ingram administration, the first and second, all right, due to a number of factors, one of which was Atlantis, all right? They changed things, and I remember Royal Towers opened in, what, 97, 98? All right, and that changed the landscape of the Bahamas again, all right? I don't know what tacit glass ceiling he's talking about, and I would have loved to have understood that. I would have loved for him to have come with some data to say, we saw wealth creation go here, we saw the economy go this way, and here's where the majority of these people hit a glass ceiling. Their earnings capped at X, Y, Z. Because many, 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 many people became millionaires. So I don't know what the glass ceiling means. Does it mean that they didn't take over industry? I don't know. You see, so when you throw these things out here and say that they are fact, and yes, you want us, you want to be thought provoking, you want us to agree slash disagree or whatever like that, it should be backed by something, okay? Which economic glass ceiling tacitly remained, okay? It says despite, and in fact, we could talk about this all week, to be honest with you, despite the unquestionable achievements of the Pilling era. I see two forces at play. Education gave thousands of Bahamians new paths to self-empowerment and opportunity, but the economy was not sufficiently expanded and diversified in order to accommodate them. After the initial burst of middle-class success, educated Bahamians were later encouraged to become job seekers rather than people with high ambitions to pursue careers and create wealth. Access to the big sectors of the economy still largely remaining in the hands of the few. Over time, frustration and cynicism has grown among the many. I don't agree with him. If you asked most educated Bahamians what it would take for them to come back to their country, well, a lot of y'all are trying to get out, but most, they don't want y'all where y'all are, to be honest with you. They don't like foreigners. We might as well come back here and build something. But then a lot of people ain't coming back because y'all killing everybody and drive like garbage. But if you ask, let me say not if you, in my conversations with Bahamians who are educated and who think about their prospects back at home, they say essentially three things. First, I want a job. A job can mean career. Okay. I need to get paid. I don't spend up all my parents' money. I need to get paid. I need a well-paying job that can allow me to have a good quality of life. Okay? I want affordable housing. Okay? That's the next thing. And the other thing is, I ain't into all the crime. That's what I hear. And you could go down the list, reliable electricity, et cetera. We got a call. Let's do it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon. How are you doing, Juan? I'm doing fine, thank you. Who is the person you're referring to who spoke about the country of independence, et cetera?
This is the Prime Minister, Brave Davis.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to know.
I'm just
tuning in, so I just wanted to be certain.
Okay.
I'll continue to listen.
Oh, okay, sure. Okay, so I'm sorry. I know some of you tune in late. You should catch it from the beginning, man. It's good stuff. This is a lecture given by the Prime Minister, Philip Brave Davis, last night at the University of the Bahamas in the Meet the Policymakers series. And he's talking about the National Development Plan. And so in order to talk about his view of the National Development Plan, he wanted to put into context what history has done so far. I don't agree with his retelling of all of history, and I'm trying to explain why. But this is what he has said occurred in his view that led us to where we are today. We got to take a break. All right, let's take a break. And after the other side. All right.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Hello, Keisha, you something else, boy.
Who this is? Tamika?
You ain't even remember my name?
Wildred. Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning a trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you gotta get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine. Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I see her hiding that under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you're going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO, WHO, Canada, and USAID.
Here we go. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the test, always, you're always covering me. J.S.J. S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
The King wants you to take a walk on the tangy side with the all-new Zesty Whopper collection at Burger King Nassau. Enjoy the classic Zesty Whopper with two types of cheese, zesty sauce, and crispy onions stacked on 100% flame-grilled beef. Or go zesty on our plant-based Whopper and crispy chicken. All three are saucy, crunchy, and full of flavor, and only available at Burger King Nassau. Visit any of our seven locations and enjoy a Zesty Whopper as a combo or as part of the King's Feast at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
We'll be right back.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio. 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. Good to have you with us. We're talking about the lecture the Prime Minister gave at the Meet the Policymakers forum put on by the Government and Public Policy Institute at the University of the Bahamas last night. All right. Let's do some text, man. We got text. Says, Juan, did you see last night town hall? How come you ain't talking about it? The LGBT came to claim their political promise. Well, I don't know where you sent, when you sent this text, but I did speak about it. Says, at some point, Bahamians have to stop lying to themselves. There's no development plan. Nothing is happening in this country. And you didn't say where Lincoln was wrong. And I want to surprise you and Guardian are part of the big part of the homosexual movement. Yeah, I'm a big part of the homosexual movement. Facts, no doubt. And Lincoln was wrong in where he said that they can repatriate funds, foreign companies, and that is wrong. You know, that that nothing's happening in this country. What you meant to say is nothing's happening for you. Yeah? You don't have anything happening. That's what you meant to say, right? Because nothing's happening with you and you're doing nothing doesn't mean that nothing's happening in this country. So before you make blanket statements, you should look at your own stuff. You don't, what you meant to say was you don't have anything happening. I know lots of people have stuff happening. You guess not. Says LOL the cat. Sorry, that's all I got. No thought-provoking points today. I hate when cats roll up against you. Yuck. This says, Dr. Sands sounded like he was disappointed in the conduct of the people over the holidays pertaining to COVID protocols. Okay. I don't know. I didn't hear what he said. It says, Juan, I'm just joining, who made the speech you're referring. Philip Brave Davis. I'd be ashamed to say nothing happened in this country. Like, I'd feel stupid. Like, I'd feel like people will know I suck. What do you mean nothing's happening? What do you think's going on around here? Like, what? But, you know, that's just nonsensical. Development, our investment in e-government was supposed to facilitate, not stifle us, right? Why is a police certificate taking up to 5 days as opposed to the usual 2 days several years ago? You know, not sure. Not sure. It's been a while since I got a police certificate. And that's the case, and that's a problem. Says the economic glass ceiling was who owned our infrastructure, e.g. food stores, pharmaceutical companies, import-export company. Okay. Okay. So, I'm sorry. Who's stopping people who are educated from opening food stores, pharmaceutical companies, and import-export companies? Let me know. You may say like a large part of it was carved out by certain people. I don't know that that represents an economic glass ceiling. Says if we could get a cabinet like the Pinling cabinet, whose sole focus is not to get into cabinet to pile up water and maintenance contracts to enrich themselves, my God, the Bahamas could become the best little country in the world. We have a great location. We have brilliant people. Those men were true visionaries and simply brilliant. Dumb leaders don't like brilliant people. I talk about a previous administration, but I ain't calling no names. I hear you. It says, and I under no illusions about Pinling's failures, but certainly he was brilliant and many others around him as well. Absolutely. All right. This message says, the speech was too political. It can't be a plan if everyone is not on board. Could have worked with Pintard and made it a real national development plan. If not, we will be the same place 7 years from now. Yep. I would work with Pintard, and it's in Pintard's interest to be seen to be on board with making sure the national development plan is a robust one. It is on track because his predecessor pretty much abandoned it. Says Juan, the only exchange control we need is that for companies. The dollar peg is not going to be influenced by the individual citizen. It is the retail companies who have hundreds of millions of dollars in the local banks that are not interested in reinvesting them into the country. You can see that a lot of them don't care about the upkeep of their premises. If you allow them to move money freely, we would have a mass exodus, but the regular citizen, 5K to 1 million, isn't going to affect the peg. True. Absolutely true. Okay. Let's go to the text message. This says the PM gives a lot of pretty speeches. I want money in my pockets. Vote promise are on our bank accounts on payday. Says, what's going on, Juan? You are my boy, right? But when did you become so rude? You insult persons more often than not now. I like it more when you were for the people. Some people say stupid things, but let's stick together, bro. Well, here's the thing. I hear you, right? And since we boys, don't watch none. I'm not going to take nothing. And if we boys and you listen to my show, you told me I'm not. I told you at the beginning of the year, and this is what it is, and this is my level, and that's where I am. And ain't no amount of pretty words can change it. I told you I'm not taking no crazy disrespect from nobody, not no anonymous people. I'm not going to sit here and be your shrinking violet and have you pile your nonsense and your abuse upon me. It ain't like that. Now, who can handle it? Keep it pushing. And that's just where we are, straight up, right? So you ain't going to try throw shade about who and some homosexual agenda and all this. I'm with it. I'm going to make you look dumb because you sound dumb. And that's where I am. So when did I become so rude? I'm going to say January 1, 2022, when it really took hold. And I'm not taking nothing off nobody. That's where we are with that because y'all take too many liberties. One, I thought the WO that Lang signed on to was supposed to open up opportunities and jobs for Bahamians and make things cheaper. We need Lang to explain this WTO thing again. It says, you know, it's nonsensical. Ain't nothing changed. It's still about friends, family, and lovers. Brave Davis needs to sit down and shut up and talk about Brewplant. Nobody feeling that. All right. I hear you. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about the speech. But word up. You insult me. I feel no compunction about insulting you. I'm pretty much done being the bigger man. All your shade, I got it for you too. Not a problem where we are. All right, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Your way.
Double shot, decaf, cappuccino.
Light roast, Colombian, no milk.
You do vacations your way.
Hiking boots, tent, mountains.
Five-star hotels and theater.
And now you can do insurance your way.
Online.
Email.
Chat.
WhatsApp.
Or in branch. For home, car, travel, boat, or business insurance, do it anyway with NUA Insurance agents and brokers. Visit NUAinsurance.com, call, or stop by a branch today.
When it comes to picking a reliable and puts you first, only one name comes to mind, Wilmax Pharmacy, a team of trusted and trained pharmacists ready to serve and assist you with all your pharmaceutical and over-the-counter needs. We also carry beauty and hair products as well as household and everyday supplies. Open 7 days a week, 7:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. NIV drug plan is accepted. Cut down your wait time. WhatsApp new prescriptions and refills to 817-4067. Visit Wilmax Pharmacy today. Poinciana Drive, opposite University of the Bahamas. Call 323-1037.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, bombers. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. We're talking about the Prime Minister's speech he gave, lecture really, that he gave last night. I don't know whether we're going to get much further into it than where we are now, but let's discuss, all right? So the Prime Minister's thrust was one in which sought to explain the circumstances in which we found ourselves and different segments of time. All right. And he characterized the Pinling years as one of success for the government in terms of altering the social order. But he also said the economy was not sufficiently expanded and diversified in order to accommodate educated men. And that is debatable. He said middle-class educated Americans were encouraged to become rather than people with high ambitions to pursue careers and create wealth. With access to the big sectors of the economy still largely remaining in the hands of the few, over time, frustration and cynicism has grown among the many. All right. So he says, with access to the big sectors of the economy still largely remaining in the hands of the few, over time, frustration and cynicism has grown among the many. Okay. In the context of where we find ourselves today, I see strong similarities between the desire for fundamental transformational change that existed then and the present desire for fundamental transformational change that exists now. Our context derives from the legacy of that time. Okay. He said, I want you to listen to this part. He said, with the first change of government since independence taking place in 1992, national development therefore featured a more managerial approach. And the status quo was largely left intact. Okay. A quick glance, the biggest initiatives of that time reflect an ideological shift which removes certain economic protections for Bahamians that had been implemented during the Pinling years. The repeal of the Immovable Property Act, the privatization of BTC, the monopolization of the port entry, the Arawak port, and the extensive roadworks initiatives all allowed private interest to profit magnificently from government institutions. Other social initiatives, such as the liberalization of the radio airwaves, introduced similar, ostensibly, quote, free market changes. This proliferation of media, and especially the radio call-in format, was the early version of the social media landscape on which we live today. Listen to this. While the language of the time was about the virtues of capitalism and so on, in fact, public money was used to subsidize many of these projects and create protections against competition and other market forces. Okay. Public money was used to subsidize many projects. So what public money was used to subsidize the liberalization of the radio airwaves? I'd be interested to know. The Immovable Property Act was not something that was subsidized by public money. What the Immovable Property Act did was remove cabinet approval from foreigners buying land, selling land, et cetera. But if we're going to be clear in the context of history, the Immovable Property Act didn't come in and then foreigners just owned a bunch of land. We were a British colony for several hundred years. Foreigners already owned a lot of the land. Now, Pinling had to strike a delicate balance so that the people with money in the economy wouldn't just pull out and leave and go Britain, America, wherever, because they were afraid of a black ruling class. All right. The privatization of BTC, certainly that was used with public funds. I don't understand how that created protections against competition by liberal. I don't understand what he's talking about. So, for instance, the privatization of BTC, agree or disagree, I do disagree with the company it was sold to, that had built in avenues to allow competition, which is why we have Alive today. So I don't understand what you're saying. The monopolization of the port of entry of the Arawak port. So since when, fair enough. The government put $40 million up, the private interest put $40 million up, $20 million was sourced from the public. All right, fair enough. Government helped subsidize the Arawak port. That's not disputable. I think the aims were good, but I don't know that one can argue that it didn't continue to consolidate shipping in the hands of a few. Not that only these families are involved in shipping, that wouldn't be true to say. The roadworks initiatives were subsidized by public money. So show me a road in the Bahamas that the government didn't build. Show me a in the Bahamas that public money was not spent on. Are you referring perhaps to Bahamas Hot Mix? Because that's an incredibly, to me, strange perspective in that y'all still employ them and we didn't have any other companies that were doing Bahamas striping, et cetera. Show me where public road infrastructure isn't subsidized by public money. Maybe he's not talking about the roadworks. The roadworks were handled poorly, but take a second and imagine all the pain and mess that happened there. A, take a second and imagine what would have occurred. What New Providence would look like had we not had the New Providence Road Improvement Project with all its flaws. Just take a second and think about what it would be like to traverse this island were it not for the Road Improvement Project and other things like the airport gateway. Et cetera. And also, I think what you mean to say is you didn't like the way the road project was done, but isn't the government spending $30 million to redo Gladstone Road? right? So I don't understand, like, where we get this thing where, oh, we shouldn't use public money for roads. I don't. We're spending $30 million on Gladstone Road. We'll see who gets the contracts, et cetera. But, you know, I don't know that, that's a valid point. So you can look at these things and go, yeah, you know, they were to protect a select few, but I don't see Bahamians as being, I don't see this as being the beginning of the end for Bahamians. And in fact, as I said, that period of the first couple of Ingram administrations, the first several, the majority of it anyway, saw the largest level of economic growth the Bahamas had ever seen. A fact, you may not have liked how certain things went down, but it just is what it is. There's a lot more he said, but we got to go. Let me do some text messages before we go back here. He said he wanted to provoke debate, so and that's what we did. This says, Terrence, the Auditor General, needs to bring those furnitures back from Europe. Bring them back to Bahamas so we can put them on auction. 18,000 rug, $12,000 bed. Says, y'all sure Brave wrote this speech or something Latre Ramming put together in Davis Peru? It says, well, I'm not going to lie, but if I was born during that era of the UBP, I would have left the country too to avoid these PLPs from ruling over the Bahamas. Not a lot of people did. I mean, I don't get the. Okay. All right, we got to go. All right. So we tried to do our best to dig into it. And we will see if there's some more we can deal with it on tomorrow. Okay? So Lang's up next with Z Live Off the Record. Hopefully he will continue this discussion or at least deal with Electric Change last night, since he's the majority the person who majorly organized it. All right, we got to get out of here. You guys take care out there. Have a great day, Bahamas. We'll see you tomorrow, Lord willing.